Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt, and I'm also apologetic. We had intended to record this right at 10 a.m.
Yes.
Thursday morning, and we had texted back and forth. We set it, good to go. I sat down, I started writing, doing some work, and I totally lost track of time. Pick up my head, and it's 10:26, and I realized I was a car that just barreled through the police tape past 10 o'clock, and here we are. So I am deeply apologetic, Matt.
What were you working on? At least, and you can make it up if it's something not really important.
Well, I was writing scripts for the Apple show, but I was particularly looking at the debut record for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the self-titled one. And
okay,
and there's a lot of really great stories. Okay, quickly. So they worked with Andy Gill, who was the guitarist of Gang of Four. They're young guys. They're making their first record. And the crown jewel, according to Anthony Kiedis, is a tune called Police Helicopter. It's a good tune. And he catches a quick glimpse at the notebook of Andy Gill, the producer. And next to the song Police Helicopter, Gill writes one word. Shit.
Shit sandwich.
Yeah, I think they can. So just writing about that, and one of the joys, like doing sports too, is there's the surface level enjoyment of the thing, and then there's the deep dive into the stuff that created the thing. If you really love sports, you don't just want to watch the outcome. You kind of want to know, how do we get here? You know, how does history play into it? How do personal dynamics play into this? Like, sports are great for deep dives. You can go forever. Like, it's a Mariana's Trench of stuff that you can research to enhance your enjoyment of sports. And I think that that's less true of music, but also true of music.
Well, I think it's just a lot harder in music because the always interesting thing, like just take the Tampa Bay Lightning. If you want to do a deep dive and how they got there, you can go and find the NHL draft records for the last 10 or 12 years. And you can find who they took, when they took them, how late it was, and all that kind of stuff. So you could sort of, who were the players signed, traded, coaches hired, fired, all that sort of stuff. And so you can trace back everything that led to Tampa winning a championship. I think it's a lot harder to how a certain band or singer won a Juno. That's harder to do.
So the internet's interesting for nerd culture. And the rise of the internet and the rise of nerd culture obviously go hand in hand. But the idea is that the imagination of youth who grew up with the internet tends to be less into deep dives and more into sort of spread wide. Hence the idea of the web, right? Like you can kind of go far across the surface of your searches and not necessarily deep. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I guess it just comes back to the person, but I was never I was not an early adopter of the internet. And what really got me into it was when I finally realized you can learn anything about the stuff you care about. And that's thrilling. And I think really you've seen how sports radio has changed too, to sort of mimic the patterns of someone investigating stuff on the internet. Like it used to just be a function of like, tell people what's going on. Well, that's useless now. I mean, can you imagine doing your show, Matt, where you basically just informed people what was happening?
That would be so boring. That would be boring. That'd be boring for everyone. That'd be boring for me. It'd be easier. And I know there's certainly people in the industry that sometimes tend to just tell you the stats and stuff, but that'd be boring for everyone involved.
I don't think this is breaking a story to people, but for a long time, it was shocking to discover that there's a lot of fans who know at least as much as the hosts on sports radio. Mm-hmm. What they don't have is access. What they don't have is the ability to sort of hear the behind the scenes stories. Like, you know, the fan only gets the public face of stuff. I think in a lot of ways, the host listener relationship on radio is a privileged relationship where it's understood that the host has access to information that the fan doesn't. It's the only place where you can remain special is in your access.
Yeah, it's the access, and then also, yeah, oh no, the access is first, and then the other side is, it's my job to know all the stuff that you don't know as the fan, because right. you have your own job. You've got a, you work as an accountant, you're a parent looking after kids, so a lot of your time is spent, you know, being responsible. It's my job to know who the, you know, who the Maple Leafs could have taken instead of Tyler Biggs, you know, and it's my job to remember that and have that at a moment's notice.
You were a historically based football fan when you were a kid, right? Like, you loved football, and that tended, and this is also the influence of your dad, who's very historically based, but you had a, your expression of loving football tended to be like what happened in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Do you think if you'd grown up today, like if young Matt was 20 years old today, do you think you would care as much about history, or do you think you'd be more inclined to say, you know, what are the analytics of stuff?
I think it'd be more on that one. What are the analytics? And I think you'd be, you'd often cases, you look at what happened in the 70s and you wouldn't be as impressed, because in today's day, you have so much more access to just seeing these great feats of athleticism by today's athletes that it pales in comparison when you then see the grainy footage of Fred Biletnikoff or Dave Casper or Warren Wells or Cliff Branch. And yes, I'm just going with Raider receivers from the late 60s to the early 80s. So I think there was more of that mystery. Like, I love the history of it because you'd learn these names of Roger Staubach or Terry Bradshaw, who would just rip it deep, and Lynn Swann to make this crazy catch, and you'd fall in love with the history of football. But then you, if you looked at the overall numbers of Lynn Swann, you go, well, his yards after catch, they don't even compare with Julian Edelman. And maybe that takes away the your at least early days wanting to learn and your love of the history of the game.
When we were kids, there weren't as many places to go to express your love. So it tended to manifest in things like cards. You got a lot of cards and you would memorize the backs of them.
Yeah.
And then just books that you could take out of the library, like biographies of people, because there was no public analysis. The papers were basically there to give you the information on what happened last night with a little bit of analysis, like your columnists would give you analysis. But it wasn't like today where you have a wall of analytical resources at your disposal. You know, I think about when I was a kid and I loved the Leafs, and my mom's best friend, Mary, had tickets up in the Grays at the old gardens. And, you know, so a few times a year she would take me, and we were walking out and I fell in love with this book, just the cover of it. I'll never forget it. It was called The Leafs, The First 50 Years. And, you know, there's a sprawling goalie on the front and goal was all exciting. And I got it for Christmas and I memorized that book, you know, because what else could you do, you know, in the four days between games?
Nothing. That's it. By the way, Bob, at the end of that first book, I wonder if the last sentence should have been, you know, the last 50 years have been really, really good. The next 50 years, you may want to sit this one out.
Well, that book came out in the 70s, so they probably didn't know Iceberg right ahead.
Oh, no, I know. Exactly. And actually, all these Stanley Cup wins.
Yeah. It's like the end of the Ten Commandments, where it's like, wait, we got to walk for 40 years before we find this place.
Yeah, and by the way, a lot of those people who walked that 40 years, ask them today how they feel about that geography. Not so hot.
Judaism, the first 40 years.
After that, it's smooth sailing, everybody. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
One final thought on this. Just because you mentioned about Maple Leafs Gardens and going to a game, I suddenly thought about wrestling. And this goes to the idea that I'm so glad we have the internet now and just everything it provides. But I'm also glad that I grew up without any of it, because then I just got to love Bret the Hitman Hart and Greg the Hammer Valentine, the Hart Connection, and just and all the wrestlers. And I only had the information I was given. Now, was a lot of that propaganda? Yes. I admit that, you know, there are flaws in what I'm about to say, but there was something cool as a kid of the mystery. You didn't know who they really were. There wasn't a TMZ video of them stumbling drunk. We just, all we had was them as these heroes created by to us by Vince McMahon and the McMahon family. And I understand the propaganda side to it, but there was also something just really cool about not knowing everything about our heroes.
What I would say, and this sounds contradictory, maybe I'm going to express this wrong, but what it seems to be is that the internet makes things more interesting, but less special.
Yes.
And we grew up in an era where stuff was big event, big ticket. But, you know, it's kind of like pornography. I mean, it always ends the same. And once it's ubiquitous, like, it's just, it's not a destination. It's really hard to get excited about, you know, stealing your uncle's Playboy to catch a quick look while no one's, you know, while you're under the radar, when you've got the internet, which has this stuff 24/7 available to anybody with a password.
I still remember, and he's passed now, my uncle Court, his Playboy collection. My friends, and they're all 46, some of them have very high-ranking jobs and impressive homes. They still remember the Playboy magazines in a very specific closet at the boathouse at the cottage. We still talk about it, and we're 46.
More interesting, less special. I don't think we've talked about Kyle Lowry going to the Heat yet. I think we recorded our last pod before it happened, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts, buddy?
On the emotional level, kind of reminds me of Roy Halladay, except at least we had the joy of Kyle Lowry winning a title here in Toronto. They're unlike with like Bosch or Vince or T-Mac or a lot of other players. There was a lot of negativity when they left and there was insecurity and all the other things. With Kyle Lowry, I think everyone was the same. We're bummed out. We're sad. But we're like, hey, bon voyage. I wish you all the best. Maybe I wish it wasn't Miami, but nonetheless, it's a coach you respect. We all respect Jimmy Butler. So yeah, like I'm bummed out, but I'm not angry. I have no negativity. And I think my emotions are probably 75% of other Raptor fans.
I've heard you make the comparison between Lowry and Halladay before, and it's perfect here. Like it's a perfect comparison right down to here's a guy who went in Toronto from being, you know, a respected player, a guy with some interesting upside to a Hall of Famer, largely because of work ethic and character.
Yep.
And so you watch not just the player develop, but you watch the person develop, and that's a really special journey. So I love that comparison. And you're right. When Halladay went to the Phillies, everybody was a little happy, like someone who gets out of the small town to go to New York and follow their dream.
Exactly. Yeah, we're also like back then with those Jays where they would finish at best third and they would have their payroll would be $100 million less than the Yankees or the Red Sox. We were the people working in the mines, and it was called the Rogers Ricciardi mine. And there we were. But one of our friends or family, they got to go to New York to follow their dream as an actor. You're absolutely right, Bob.
Billy, you're smart. You can do math in your head. You can do anything. You just get out of Ricciardi mines.
No, go. Don't worry about me and Pop. We'll be here mining the asbestos. You've got the learning in your head.
I don't think it's exactly that for Lowry, but to your point. Yeah, it's a good fit. And one thing I love, and we can get more into DeMar a bit later, but I love the fact that they both signed 3-year deals in their free agency, and they're for almost exactly the same amount of money. 90 for Kyle, 85 for DeMar. It just feels right that those guys are probably on their last contracts, and it's almost like they go out as equals, you know, at least monetarily.
Monetarily as equals, it ends there. By the way, I want to apologize to my girlfriend Amy. She's doing a Peloton workout right now, and when I was recreating my mining scene, she looked over. First, she was surprised, and then a little bit disgusted, and I think more than anything else, just defeated. Defeated and knowing every now and then, that's just what I'm going to do, and it's never going to change. And I'm not even talking to you, Bob. I'm now talking to her. It's never going to change. I'm back to you, Bob.
You had a bit of Mulaney in there. I like that.
I did. Yeah, true.
For the Raptors, it makes sense. Let me ask you your opinion, because I haven't heard a lot of people say this, but when he didn't go at the deadline, it's because we had heard intel, and the deal sounded kind of shabby for a guy that we valued as high as Kyle Lowry. But turning into Dragic and Precious Achiuwa, that feels like Masai was kind of smart to wait for a free agency and do the sign and trade. Like, doesn't it? I haven't really heard anybody say this. Am I missing the boat? But it feels like what we got for Lowry is much higher at free agency than it was proposed to be a trade deadline.
Oh, yeah. Because what you heard is that there was nothing. That was a pittance coming back. And at the time, I was actually fine with it. Because the message was Masai's not going to take a bad deal. Don't Don't try to fool him. Don't try to con one. That's like, that, just don't waste his time. So I was totally okay with it. I mean, as of now, yeah, it feels about right for Lowry.
I like Dragic, and if he wound up on the team, that wouldn't break my heart. But it sounds like he doesn't really want to be here, and he's a very flippable asset. So we'll get something. And I've been thinking a lot, as we all have, about Scotty Barnes and the direction of the team. Now with Kyle gone, and it just feels like we're really starting in earnest that transition that we talked about after the championship. And I like where we're going. I like it. It's hard when you're not a market that can just say, hey, let's get Durant and Harden. It's hard when you're, you know, not in the mix for those biggest names. But if we saw anything like with Milwaukee, if you get the right guy, you become the right market. We haven't done that yet. Chris Bosh was an excellent player, going to be a Hall of Famer, but he wasn't that guy. Vince probably could have been that guy, but for a million reasons, most of them bad, it didn't work out. But now I feel like we're ready as a franchise. We're in a place as a fan base and an organization to draft somebody or get somebody young and just have them become the person and then build around that. That's clearly what Masai wants in Scotty Barnes, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I'm here for it as well. I'm here for also OG Anunoby can continue to develop when you look at his offensive numbers. I'm here for maybe Siakam gets traded to Golden State, which makes more and more sense every day. And we can discuss that in a moment. You know, for me, the big thing just comes down to is Nurse and Masai and Bobby Webster all here. If they're all here, then good. Then you have that base. Then we move on to the players. Van Vliet and Gary Trent Jr. need to shoot over 40%. Siakam's the big mystery, and Scotty Barnes is the development. It looks like Kem Birch might come back. You know, the thing about the Raptors, though, is if everyone's back and healthy, this is not a lottery team. You got to hope it is Scotty Barnes or that OG or whatever happens with Siakam, because the Raptors getting the 4 pick, if things go right, if they're healthy, the Raptors aren't drafted in the top 5.
No, but they are clearly trying to assemble a war chest of assets that will give them a chance. And if we've learned anything from the NBA is that it's better to have a high draft pick. You have a better chance of getting a superstar.
Yes.
But you don't have to have one. If you're in the top, say, 1 to 15, you've got a reasonable, like obviously fewer and fewer chances as you get further down the ladder. But nobody knows nothing, Matt. Nobody knows nothing. And you just got to keep taking swings. It's possible that Oklahoma City is going to be the greatest team in history if they draft well, because they got nothing but opportunity. You make such a good point about the brain trust. Like, I was thinking about San Antonio, and San Antonio had that incredible run because, one, they got lucky and got Robinson and then Tim Duncan right afterwards. Like, that's incredible. But, you know, they had Pop and RJ Buford and Sam Presti and all these really smart people running the shop. You know, like, if we've seen anything, like, New Orleans had Anthony Davis and then Zion Williamson, and they're pissing it away. So you can have, you know, all the luck you want. If you don't know what to do with it, it's no good. So when luck does drop into the Raptors' lap, I feel like we'll make the most of it.
I agree. It's like Milwaukee got lucky because Giannis grew 3-4 inches after he was drafted. If he was that height before, he would have been taken well before the Bucks, and they were able to finally, to put it together. Same thing with Kawhi in San Antonio. No one knew what they had with that guy. But Bob, you know the team that interests me the most. It's Golden State, and it's Golden State because, let me ask you this, Steph Curry is like 33 years old.
Just signed a massive deal.
He signs a massive deal, and maybe it's because, hey, $50 million a year, that's pretty keen. But Steph's got plenty of money. Why do you sign a 4-year extension, and then the team drafts 2 more teenagers this year to go along with the teenager they drafted last year? And these are high picks, number 2 pick and number 7 and number 14. All 3 of those picks scream, we're thinking about the future, but you just signed Steph Curry to a 4-year extension. That doesn't mesh.
Okay, so the Raps like Franz Wagner, who the Warriors got. Who did they get at 14? Do you remember?
Oh, no, it wasn't Wagner. They got Wagner. It was...
you're right, because Orlando got Franz Wagner.
So no. Yes, I think Orlando with their second pick got Franz.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. Who did they take at 7? Was it? Oh, it was Kuminga, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was Kuminga at 7, who turns 19 in October, and Moses Moody, who's not going to be 20 until the end of until like, I think like next May.
I got to say, when you put it that way, that's a great point. And then you flip Siakam over there and you build something around those two picks.
And Van Vliet and OG, and we'll see what you have with Gary Trent Jr. And, you know, so you got young pieces there.
Or you don't necessarily even have to make it around those two picks if you think James Wiseman has something to offer.
Yeah.
That's about your scouting, but he was the number two overall pick. And you know how quickly people get written off? It's just so weird these days. Like, can you imagine having a big who's 19 years old in the NBA 20 years ago, and he has a mediocre first season, and people are like, well, that's a bust.
Yeah, look at DeAndre Ayton.
A great example. Like, I was texting our buddy Jonas Siegel during the finals and just saying, this DeAndre Ayton thing makes me revisit what James Wiseman could become, and maybe the Raptors should be more interested in him. I'm not a scout. It's not like I watched, you know, the Warriors play a ton. People loved him for a reason. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and
okay, so let me ask you. The next question is not just could it happen, is would you do it? Would you build a deal around Wiseman, one of those picks for Siakam?
Yeah, I think I would. I think I would take that swing. And listen, if Siakam comes back, and whenever he's not going to start the season, if he comes back fully healthy and whatever his problems were with the coach and staff or with COVID or anything else, there's a chance that all goes away. He goes back to kicking ass, and then I look like an idiot. You know, I fully admit it. But if this is about taking swings on guys with high upside, and also Siakam, you know, he's 27. It's not that he's old, but he's certainly older than the Scotty Barnes or the OG Anunoby. So maybe it's about finding more players that are around the Barnes and Anunoby age. And with Van Vliet, I know he's 27, but, you know, I think he's going to, he's not as, well, actually, he's pretty physical. That can be an issue down the road. But yeah, I would make that deal. I would take that swing.
I like it too. And I like it because of windows of opportunity. And this current roster's window of opportunity is pretty much now, but they're not going to win. So It doesn't matter what their window of opportunity is because it doesn't really go anywhere you want to go. So if you lose Siakam and you assume that OG has another 5 good years in him, and that Fred, even if he is just like a veteran presence at that point, will still be a useful player, then some of these young guys could be coming into their own and have great cohesion, and that's exciting. And also, when you have Fred and OG on the team, I can't see missing the playoffs. I think you're still going to get into the playoffs with those guys. And then you've got a bunch of young guys who are jumped into a situation where it's not a shitty team. They have a chance to play some big pressure games, and they're going to learn. It's actually a really cool thought, Matt. Like, I've been leaning more towards the Kings and Buddy Hield, but you pointed out a flaw in my thinking, which is Hield makes them good now. But how good does it really make them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your point's a better one, which is the championship team is the one they haven't built yet. And that's the window you have to think about.
My ceiling is higher, but my floor is also much lower.
My deal is the Suggs, and your deal is the Barnes.
Yes, perfect way to put it.
And we know who the Raptors went with, so I think they're leaning towards your way of seeing things. Plus, it would be fun to watch a new crop come up, wouldn't it? Like, we loved watching OG develop. We loved watching Fred develop. We loved watching Pascal develop. Like, there was something thrilling about being a Raptors fan and seeing them take these players and turn them into really quality NBA players. So we know that's a pleasurable experience. Like, maybe it's not going to turn into a championship, but if they bring in 3 or 4 young guys and 1 or 2 of them pan out to be really good, we're going to love those guys.
God, yes. So, yeah.
It's the same way we love OG, right? Like, we haven't met the new OG yet. The guy who comes in and over a couple years takes some bumps and comes out the other side being really valuable. God, this market loves him now.
And what I love most just on the statistical side is here's a guy who, you know, he took, I think, twice as many three-point attempts this year versus last year. And his shooting percentages didn't go down. You know, he went from 10.6 to 16 points per game, yet his overall shooting percentage only went down a bit. But his three-point attempts nearly doubled it, yet he hit a career high in three-point percentage at basically 40. And I'm sorry to throw those numbers at you, but the one thing you always look for is what happens when a guy's usage goes up to his efficiency. They're always going to go down a little bit, unless you're like the super freak like a Durant. But with OG, it really didn't. Now, it did with Van Vliet. You know, last year he shot 39, so you're hoping there. But there's just a lot to like from what we saw in OG Anunoby.
There's been a lot of talk on Raptors Twitter about OG as a possible primary part of the offense. Mm-hmm. And we never really talked about him that way because, you know, there was always Kawhi and Kyle and then Pascal. But if he could be that guy, I'm not saying he's the primary option on a championship, but what if he could be the primary option on a playoff team while all of these other guys are getting their reps? That would be worth it, right?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm with you, Matt. I really like your argument. You know, it wasn't like I was against Golden State, but I couldn't really see it. But I love the way you framed the assets and the Steph Curry window. Like, it does make them more eager to do something, and Pascal would be perfect for them. It's a rare win-win when you're dealing with two organizations.
It is. And as long, yeah, and it, as long as just, if you're Golden State, just, you know, monitoring what is the health of Siakam, how bad is his injury, how long is he going to be out for, you've got a win-now guy. And the thing is, we've seen Siakam. Siakam on some nights, he could be your best player. He'll get you 32, 11, and 5, but then you don't have to rely on him. You still got, you got Clay, you got Steph, you got Draymond. You know, you've got more than enough there.
And your point about him not needing to be the primary option is really important. But let's not forget defensively how much he'd add to that team, too. Like, they would be a nightmare to play against. Between him and Draymond and those guys on the wing, particularly Clay, like, that's a nightmare to play against. And all of a sudden, like, with Pascal, they've got to be considered are they the best team in the West? If Clay comes back healthy and they got a Pascal, are they not the best team of the West again?
It's them or the Lakers. Anthony Davis is certainly more of a bad track record of health. Yep. I do not trust, some of the younger kid signings I liked. I don't think Carmelo does anything. I think Russell Westbrook wins the headline, but I don't think he wins on the floor. We talked about that. It's close. I might give a slight edge to the Lakers, but it's close.
Yeah, I don't know. Whenever the Lakers do these kinds of moves, they're exciting, but you don't know if they're smart. They're potentially volatile. Without a Kawhi next year, I mean, we'll assume it's the whole year. And with Denver feeling like, for whatever reason, they just can't be champs, which is maybe a little unfair, but Denver and Utah, I want to see more before I commit to them being better than a Golden State team with Pascal.
Yes, I agree.
Because I know you can trust Steph and Clay. And Steve Kerr and Raymond. They've done it. Interesting take, Matt. Look at you. You must do sports radio for a living. Yeah. What's been your best take of the last week?
I am a fan of that one. Like, yeah. I'm certainly a fan of that one. Here's a take for today that's a basketball one.
Okay.
France beat Slovenia 90-89. Now, the bummer is it means we don't get to see Luka versus America. The game-saving block was done by Nicolas Batum. Evan Fournier scored 23 points. Both of those guys were free agents going into the Olympics. They chose to play. Kem Birch and Kelly Olynyk, also free agents, but they chose to not play because they were worried about where they were going to go. Dylan Brooks, his job is secure. He's going to make money. He chose not to go. O'Shea Brissett, Tristan Thompson, they're signed for at least next year. They chose to go. Am I allowed to acknowledge on the front end? I know the sacrifice and commitment, how hard it is to play for your country. Am I allowed to be bummed out that Canada isn't there because France beat Slovenia and two of the key parts were guys who said, I'm choosing my country and I will ignore my job insecurity?
I love that take. And I'm one of those people to this point who has said, you can't blame people who don't want to go. It's their choice. But, yes. And I watched France beat the U.S. Early on in the tournament. And they were
fun.
They were fun to watch. And Fournier, you know that I've always hated him because I love him. Because every time he played the Raptors, like every time a shot went out of his hand, I'm like, oh, that fucking Fournier. And it would always go in. So he just signed with the Knicks, unless I'm mistaken.
Yes.
So he did get his deal. Yeah. So to get back to your point, I think he can be because we could have had a heck of a team. There's no reason it couldn't have been France and Canada at this point with all those bodies. Yeah, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, it was just sort of a reminder. I saw and like I wasn't even thinking about it. Then Eric Kareen just mentioned, and he didn't even use names because Eric is, you know, he's a classier guy. But Eric just threw out there as like, Some NBA free agents helped France beat Slovenia and just ... So, and then, you know, I went back and looked at my notes of who's on my stink list of Canadians who didn't go represent their country.
I'm going to throw out some teams, and you tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how much deep shit they're in based on free agency as it's rolled out, okay? New Orleans.
Maybe not as deep shitty as you think. I did like them getting Devonta Graham. Lonzo wanted ball there. I'm going to put them I'm going to put them as a 6 on deep shit because they haven't made the playoffs. They're changing coaches. We'll have to see about Graham versus Ball. You know what? I'm bumping it up. 7. 7 out of 10 for deep shit.
All right. Dallas.
I'm sort of waiting till I want to know if Luka signs that max extension. That is certainly going to impact it. I think he will. I'll put them a little bit lower at a 5, but Luka's got some diva in him that should make the Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks nervous.
Sacramento just signed Alex Len. Sacramento.
10.
10 for Len?
10 for Len.
Oh, man. Sacramento. Is it possible to always make the wrong decision?
If you're them, it is. Just ask Marvin Bagley Jr.
Think about it. Trae Young and Luka went after Marvin Bagley. They both went after him.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Oof. I remember once, I don't know if you remember this, but we had Pete, what's his name on this? Alessandro? He was the GM of Sacramento, and they were doing their crowdsourcing thing where they were inviting fans to say what kinds of trades they should make. And, you know, it was sort of like, well, invite the fans into the process. And we talked to the dude, and I remember thinking afterwards, he better be really smart because this is either this is either brilliant or it's like a cry for help, like a total gimmick. Like 3-for-1 pizza.
Ooh, yeah. 2-for-1. You always felt I'm taking a bit of a risk, but hey, it's still pizza. It's good. And I've had tons of 2-for-1 pizza in my day. But when they came out with 3-for-1, I'm like, nope, I'm not doing it. A bridge too far. I don't know what corners you have cut to still make a profit off of this. So 3-for-1 pizza, bridge too far.
You have to admit, though, 2-for-1 pizza back in the day was brilliant. Yeah. And if I remember correctly, it came out pretty much in sync with our drinking years. You'd go out to the bar and then, you know, did you want a slice of pizza afterwards or 2 slices of pizza?
That green box, the 2-for-1 green box.
I can still picture the cheese, as little cheese as there was on that pizza. In my mind. What is
they stretch that pizza like Bob Cratchit would at Christmas.
You know what's a big loss in Canada? That the big slice is gone from Young and Dundas. Mm-hmm. It's sad that it never franchised because Big Slice was a treat. Did you find Big Slice a treat when you were a kid?
Of course I did. They were big in it. When I was a kid, anything big in it was awesome because again we didn't have the internet. It's like, oh, look at this. Look at me. I'm king of the mountain.
My wife and I, when we first started dating, we went to the Big Slice, probably after seeing a movie or something, and we're sitting there, and it's late, and I look up at the sign, and one of the menu items was vegetarian lasagna, but instead of the E, it was an A, so it was written vegetarian lasagna, and to two drunk, just dating people, that was the funniest thing in the world.
A lot of jokes there.
Like, honestly, it probably brought us together. Like, we're probably married today because of the Big Slice and that story.
Funny that the Big Slice and Vag all going into one. Anyway, it's a sexual geometry joke I just made there. It's a sexual geometry joke.
I think that's a good time to bring Jeff Pollock in. I think you need a lawyer.
Yeah, I think I will need a lawyer at some point. And because listen, if you need to apologize or suddenly you're in trouble with the law or just people because of your lack of decency, actually, I don't know if Jeff's the best person for you because that's a decent guy. If you do need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com, that's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. The phone number, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. He's our lawyer, and when you need legal representation, trust me, he's an excellent option to go to. So jeffpollock.com.
He asked us the other day if we would talk about underrated vegetables. I'm not 100% sure why, but it did spark conversation. At least it did between the two of you because I was still messed up over the draft, so I bowed out, but... What is your most underrated vegetable?
You see, this is probably a better category for you because in your household, the vegetable certainly plays a bigger part. I'm the guy that every year I introduce a new vegetable. I didn't really start liking tomatoes till 2015. I didn't really start liking peppers cooked or really even cold until about 2017. It takes me, you know, it takes me a long time till I allow a new vegetable into the nightclub that is the temple that is my body.
Yeah, the behind the velvet rope. I'm going to throw this one out. And I didn't really know this one, bringing up my wife again, until I married her. Or started dating her and eating at her parents' place, because it's big in the Italian community, not so much in the Ukrainian community. It's rapini. Rapini is highly underrated. It's somewhere between spinach and broccoli, and it's got a kind of a, you know, a hint of bok choy thrown in there. But when you steam it, it goes great as a side. And it's not that it's better than everything else. It's just that we don't talk about it much. It's not bitter. It's got good texture. It's interesting looking. I'm going to make a case for rapini.
Rapini is gross. Bok choy is gross. Broccoli is gross. Steamed vegetables, for the most part, are gross. I imagine right now your daughter, Charlotte, eats more vegetables than I do.
Now, is this the arrested development thing? Is this just like another sign that you refuse to grow up, is that you refuse to eat vegetables?
No, I try them all the time. I still put them in my mouth and I chew on them and I don't like the taste. I'll eat every type of fish. I will try the adventurous stuff. I'll try everything once. But it's not like I can force myself to shove, you know, cauliflower, and my brain and body and senses are all going, I enjoy this. It's not even neutral. I still find it gross. I don't want to be like this. I'd love to love all vegetables. I'd be healthier. I enjoy having more options. I can't help it, Bob.
Does it help when they're next to steak?
Well, no, because they're still there. And they show up, they look even worse when the steak is done and the vegetables are still sitting there. They, you know, there's just, it just adds to the shame factor. Also, like, it's something we shame people about. No one ever goes, Bob, looks like someone didn't eat all his lamb chops. No one's ever said that. But the amount of snide, passive-aggressive bullshit you get when you don't eat all your vegetables because someone else is a hero, you know, oh, look at me, I ate my vegetables. Oh, good for you. You want a medal? Fuck you all.
Why is it you conservatives turn everything into a culture war?
And why do you liberals, with your big PETA, you know, I just need giant governing body telling me what to do. I don't need you to tell me what to do.
My cousin Stefka, who is like super duper from Ukraine, she has all the gold teeth. We called her ODB, Old Dirty Baba. And she refused to eat vegetables. And she would do it with a smile. She'd just shake her head and she would say Zayich, which means you rabbit. Like, she just didn't believe that humans ate vegetables. That was for the animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she gets it, right?
She gets a pass. No one gets on her case, but they get on my case.
Well, yeah, nobody got on her case because she didn't speak English. So, and our Ukrainian wasn't good enough to say anything. So we kind of just smiled at each other and we took the vegetables on. Yeah. But there was a kind of a thing. You know, this, I don't know if this is true in other communities, but in our community, me growing up, meat was special. Like, the fact that you could put meat on the table meant you should put a ton of it. It was like a sign of affluence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like the other stuff, of course, the pierogies and the holopi and all that kind of stuff. Like, we obviously ate like literally tons of it, but that stuff wasn't special. That was just like everyday food, right? That was regular season food. But yeah, meat was the playoffs.
Well, yeah, no. And by the way, if you put a plate of pierogies in front of me as a kid, I would have been as happy as shit. That would have been awesome. If someone said, Matt, you could have steak and rapini or just a plate of pierogies, give me the pierogies.
Pierogies are a perfect food. Mm-hmm. And they also come with variety because there's tons of different fillings you can have. In fact, I freaked out to find out some people put blueberries in them because my family didn't do that. But I started meeting other. Yeah, they put blueberries in it. And it's actually delicious. Blueberries with a little sour cream on the side in your pierogi. Holy cow, it's dessert.
I don't know if I trust my pierogi having fruit in it. My pierogi, it's meats, it's cheeses, even the odd vegetable. But yeah, I don't know if I trust it with fruit.
You know, it didn't work with chips, the fruit flavors, but against all odds, it works with pierogies. Every culture that I can find has some version of a dumpling, and they're all delicious.
Yeah.
Whether it's, did I tell you what my mother-in-law did when we gave her pierogies for the first time? Because I brought them as a gift early on. She covered them in tomato sauce and baked them in the oven like ravioli.
That'd be delicious.
It wasn't. You know, they were filled with like sauerkraut, kapusta. It doesn't really go great with tomato sauce. But what I took from that was everybody has their own version of a dumpling. I love wontons.
So you love wontons?
Of course.
What else is there? Have you ever had, like, I believe they're called gyoza dumplings. You get them like in sushi places.
Yes.
They're Japanese. Okay. They're fried. Holy
There's no
cow,
version that's good. Bad. There's no version that's bad.
The momo, the Tibetan momo is delicious. Oh, you know what's like underrated? Well, I guess it's underrated in my life, probably not in a billion people's, but bao, like just those steamed buns.
Oh, love them.
Oh my God.
So good. The pork bao, hell yeah.
Let's start a bao chain. Like that's going to be the next super snack food. Mm-hmm. It's going to be bao. Like I'm always thinking like, who's the next big band? What's the next big team? What's the next big food? We've done charcuterie. You know, we're over barbecue. I think it's going to be bao.
First off, I am never going to be over barbecue, and charcuterie will always be part of my life. But if you want to get rid of one of the cheeses and replace it with bao, I'm down for that.
There are so many cool places when you go down to Chinatown or when you like hang out at like Christie and Bloor. And I haven't spent enough time in Scarborough, but God, Scarborough has a lot of good nooks where you can just get some delicious food. I'm all about like top 10 bao places. That's my goal for the summer. Is find Toronto's best bao.
Well,
by the way, do you say pho or pho?
Pho. I go pho.
Me too. And normally I'd be hipster and say pho because that's apparently how you're supposed to pronounce it, but I just can't. No. You know? I feel like I'm trying too hard. Like, I'm not that guy. You know, I wear orange tab Levi's. I can't say pho.
Yeah, like the at our age, say, like trying to pull off the pho, it's part of me is like, listen, just know your lane. You're not that cool. It's like, I always find it unseemly when some guy in his mid-40s or later, they know exactly what's going on with Selena Gomez because they want to keep up with what's going on with the young people. At some point, just let the young people have their thing, and you have your cigars, your scotch, your taxes, you know, and they're remaking Monty Python. Just have your thing. It's okay.
Can I tell you the moment where I knew it was over for me and it's time to move on? So our former boss, who's now the head of the PGA Tour in Europe, Keith Tully, he taught at Ryerson. He was also like the senior VP of programming at TSN. That's how we got to know him. And he invited me to come speak to his class, which I was so excited. And I thought because I was, you know, I was a dick, I would go as me, which meant I wore a Wu-Tang toque. And I'm lecturing the class in my Wu-Tang toque. And of course, Keith's just like rubbing his head like, of course. I asked him, of course he would do this. And afterwards, the kids were all like, yeah, so cool, man. Wu-Tang, retro. So retro. And I remember thinking, do you mean retro as in current today?
Oh, shameful, Bob.
Well, hip-hop is here today, gone later today. But even still, I took the message, which was they didn't dislike it. I was doing me. But they clearly did not relate to it. So that was it. That's where I realized, you know what? You are now in the what you like is retro phase of life.
Yep. There's nothing wrong with that. By the way, are you moving around? There's a lot of background noise. What's going on with you?
Well, I'm trying to find a happy place because, you know, I've got the Olympics on in the background. Mm-hmm. And I was upstairs, but I wasn't enjoying it. So I decided to come downstairs. Yeah, I've been moving around a lot. Is it ruining the sound quality?
No. There's just some moments of some weird distortions. Also, you need to get some, you need to oil up some of the hinges on your doors. Your doors open and close like a horror movie.
It's an old house.
Yeah.
The house is over 100 years old. It's an old place. People always say that's charming. Those are people who don't live in an old house.
They visit.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice idea. Oh, look at those floorboards. Are those original? You know, meanwhile, it's like the floor is at a 30-degree angle and everything creaks and you can't hide going upstairs, I'll tell you that.
No, no, you can't. Bob, I wanted to ask you a very off the beaten path question.
All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time, and we've sort of pissed away the last 20 minutes talking about food. So let's do it.
All right. I was on a bunch of beaches the last couple of weeks up in like Sabal Beach. Sabal Beach is a great place for really large, intricate, different sandcastles. And then just all the little ones that kids make. What percentage difference the person who will kick over a sandcastle versus the person who will avoid it in terms of more likely to go to jail? Because I feel if you're the sort of person that'll kick a sandcastle that's been built, you've got an 88% more chance of committing a crime than those of us who will do their best to always avoid every sand structure because they know some kid built it.
I'll take this one step further, Max. It's not really a question. It's an observation. The kid who tells the fart jokes in junior kindergarten is going to go to jail. This is my observation. One day they will grow up to be a convict. You know, it just occurred to me again, Matt. Are you back in town?
Yeah.
Well, shouldn't we be doing this in person?
Well, why aren't you over here right now?
Well, because I thought you were up north.
Sit in my living room.
Well, for the next pod, let's do it together. Are you here next week? Oh, wait, I'm not here next week.
So
In 2 weeks from now, are you going to be in Toronto?
I, as someone without children, you're going to be so annoyed with this line. I have no idea where I'm going to be. Maybe I'm in the city. Maybe I'm at the cottage. I have no idea where I'm going
to
be.
You know what? COVID has kind of equalized that, though, because we can work from home, so we're able to move around, too. But yes, ordinarily, you're right. Yeah. That would annoy me. Any final thoughts on sports before we go?
Canada.
Sandcastle. Do you want to do more hot sandcastle talk? Yeah, anybody who would kick over a sandcastle, like, and if you're over the age of 11, you're a dick.
Yeah, yeah, you're an absolute dick, and you probably should go to jail now anyway. Well, I'm not gonna wait for your inevitable crime. We just should send you to jail now.
All right. Have you enjoyed these Olympics?
It's been the last couple of days. You had Andre DeGrasse. You had us winning in the I was gonna say heptathlon, but the decathlon. I mean, that was incredible. Canada could win the gold again. Yeah, shout out to Damian Warner. The last couple of days have been a lot of fun.
I found it was a bit of a slow burn, but I'm pretty into it now. Mm-hmm. And it's like every vacation; it takes a few days to ease in. And then by the time you're easing in, you're already on your way out. But I like these as much as I did in Rio de Janeiro. And it really goes to show, this is just my opinion, that too many people root for bad. The fact that these games are happening, I know it's complicated. I know the Japanese people don't like it. I know, you know, the Olympics are fraught to begin with because of, you know, the IOC and who gets what and how much public money goes into these things and is there ever really return. And I get all that. But it's also just amazing to see what these people can do. It never fails to inspire. And it feels like before anything starts, people are always rooting for it to fail. And I don't know why.
I think people root for it to fail. I think because of a lot of the reasons you said, and they get angry, they get upset, and they just view it through the prism of evil, greedy IOC. And it's easy to view it through that prism, but I'm going to quote our good friend, Bruce Arthur. In the end, the athletes always win. The athletes always make the games good, and it's going to happen again.
It's a great line, and good for Bruce to write it. And it says more succinctly and better what I tried to say. But this is also true of, I don't know, it just feels like we live in such a negative echo chamber that before anything starts, we want to find out what's wrong with it. You know, like, mm-hmm. Let's not see what it is. Let's just decide it's bad and then prove us wrong. This is a bit of a Torontonian attitude. We tend to be kind of less than optimistic about things. Cautious at best, negative Debbie Downers at worst. I feel like in order to become a great city, we need to break out of that. You know, we need to get behind stuff and actually see potential behind things as opposed to just reasons not to do them. I remember I was at I had a former partner and he was a lawyer and he was at his office and he said, you know, he was like shaking his head. He was pitching ideas and this one guy kept shooting them down. And he said, he flipped them a quarter. He said, here's a quarter. Anybody can tell me what doesn't work. Tell me what does.
Because it's easier. What's easy? No, negative, rip, slam, cynicism. That's always the easier path.
I was listening to quotes from James Hetfield because I'm putting together this Metallica special for Apple. And he was talking about the song Hardwired to Self-Destruct. And he said it was very much like him in the sense that it starts with negative, but by the end of it, there's like the glass is half full because we're going to survive. And I thought, you know, if James Hetfield of Metallica can feel that way, maybe we can feel this way about the Olympics.
Yes. Perfect. 100%. And listen, it's easy when you watch the games and just you watch the joy and the celebration. It's easy. Listen, we can do both things. It's easy to love the games and acknowledge, you know, the dangers and the economic realities of it. But you can also just enjoy those moments when everyone is living their best moments in life. It's very inspirational.
I kind of feel like there should be one site for the summer and one site for the winter, and they're permanent. The idea, like all of this
bidding is what creates the problems.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
You know, if it was just like, let's say, I don't know, like what would be Calgary? What if Calgary became the permanent winter site? And it's got all the things you need. That would be pretty cool. And it also means the athletes would know what course they're going to train for and get good and get really good at it. Well, I guess they know anyway. That's kind of a stupid point. But I don't know. I just like the idea of a permanent site, you know, like the UN, but for sports.
Mm-hmm. I think it should be like on an island, like Fight like Island.
Fight Island?
But a real one. Because Fight Island is basically just at like in some sort of giant amusement park or something in like Dubai. I want something real.
There's some Hugh Jackman.
Oh, by the way, I'm jumping to a few thoughts here. I was thinking about how much I love Fight Island, how much I love Bruce Lee, how much I love Bruce Lee movies. Oh, there's a new Hugh Jackman movie out. That's actually how I got the Hugh Jackman there. I'm excited to see it. It looks interesting. It looks a bit like Inception. Have you seen the commercials for this?
I barely saw it, but I can't really comment because I was sort of knee deep and doing prep for today's show. But Bob, we got to end this pod. We got 30 seconds left. The CFL season starts tonight. Give me your season preview. Who do you like? Who's your MOP? Go.
I don't know anybody. I didn't even know it was starting tonight. Is that true?
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.